Our reading today is taken from John chapter 4, beginning at verse 1. Jesus talks with a Samaritan woman. The Pharisees heard that Jesus was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. When the Lord learned of this, he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his flocks and herds?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." He told her, "Go call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." Jesus declared, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming, and has now come, when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship in spirit and in truth." The woman said, "I know that Messiah called Christ is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I who speak to you am he." Just then his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with a woman. But no one asked, "What do you want?" or "Why are you talking with her?" Then, leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, "Come, see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ?"
Thank you, Edwina. It was a long passage, everybody. But what an incredible passage of transformation and of change, of encountering Jesus. It is the most amazing, I don't want to steal your thunder, but it's the most amazing passage of Scripture. So I know you chose it, and thank you. Rachel's going to share about the Talking Jesus report and inspire us in what it means to share Jesus with others and what others think of Jesus. And she's going to do that for a few moments. And then we're going to have a song. And then after that, there's going to be a Q&A. So if anyone has any questions, do start thinking as Rachel is speaking. And we'll have a few questions. And Rachel, you're going to just answer those questions. Yeah, and that'll be great. So do think about what Rachel's sharing, and then don't be shy in asking a question. I won't be able to walk around too quickly with a rolling mic. So if anyone could put their hand up right now and say, "I will be that person to assist you with the rolling mic," I'm going to give it to you right now. Oh, you're amazing. Thank you very much. That's great. Thank you so much, Catherine. Right, I'm going to pray for you and then over to you. Loving God, thank you so much for being here this morning, to hear your word as Edwina read it out to us so beautifully, for the prayers that Morag prayed and led us into thinking about a world in need. We want to share Jesus to a broken world because he is the hope for all. Amen.
Well, good morning, everybody. Lovely to be with you this morning. Give me a little wave if you're feeling a bit hot and sticky. Quite a few of you. You should have found, as Matt said earlier, one of these. You have my full permission to not just delve into them, but to waft them while I speak, to cool yourselves down. It's genuinely really lovely to be here this morning, not only to see Matt, but to come with Liz, but to be here at SBC. I was very sad not to be able to come. Was it a year ago that Matt and Hannah joined you thereabouts for his induction? And I wasn't able to come that day, but amazing to come and see you this morning. Let me tell you a little bit about me. My name's Rachel Heffer. As Matt said, I serve as head of mission at the Evangelical Alliance. I've been there for 5 years. My background before that was working with a diocese and 14 years with Youth for Christ based in youth ministry. So I believe your wonderful young people are out in the big sports hall just now. My heart and passion still very much in youth work and lots that I'm involved in Ely in Cambridgeshire, where I serve in the church overseeing a lot of our youth ministry there. But beyond that, my heart and passion, certainly in my role at the EA, we have a base in London, which is where I'm based. As Matt said, I live in Ely. Myself and Liz are in Ely in Cambridgeshire. And I travel into London, but we have offices in Wales, in Northern Ireland, in Scotland. And all that we try and do as a unity organisation at the Evangelical Alliance is to serve the church, churches like yours and across the UK, to cheer on, to pray for, to champion, to be alongside, to hopefully equip and resource people so that, just as our strapline says, together we can really make Jesus known. Are you up for that? Is that what you're wanting to do as well this morning? Together, we want to make Jesus known. And I'm thrilled to come in and join this series that you've been looking at. And I hope today that actually just a few nuggets of what I can share with you about the big picture UK landscape will actually, both for you and for me, drop down into our own personal lives, friendship groups, workplaces, family members, and our context, to just give us something to take away today that inspires us and equips us for making Jesus known to those around us. A little bit about me. I've told you where I live. I'm married to Darren. Darren's an architect. He's based in Cambridge. I've got two boys, Isaac, who is 12, and Jacob, who's nearly 15. I'm very outnumbered in my house. They are completely Arsenal obsessed. Have we got any Arsenal fans? Oh, there's one. Well done. Nice to meet you. I was talking to a colleague of mine just last week who couldn't believe when I was telling him my tales of woe, not only of being a football widow, standing for far too many hours on very cold football pitches in all seasons, of course, but actually my house is littered with all Arsenal memorabilia, including cannons in the garden, because they're known as the Gunners, the Cannons, a red and white room, you name it. Please feel sorry for me. But in the midst of that and all of the football obsession that is my world, I've become really passionate as well about mission through sport. Because actually part of what I'd love to share with you today is not just about sport or football, but about how we just rub up alongside people in the places that we already find ourselves. And so I'm just going to share with you as well in a moment a bit of a whistle-stop tour through some of that, which I hope Well, I'll share with you my two passions of speaking about this research, which I'll get onto in just a moment, is this, that one, as a corporate community, your church, my church, across the wider UK church, that actually we would be a community of people who develop a culture of evangelism. Not that we default thinking, I'm not an evangelist, that big scary word, that's for the person, the extrovert, the person on the platform who finds it very easy. But actually we'd have a culture in our midst whereby every one of us feels released and confident to know that we can share Jesus with people around us. So we have that corporate culture, but also the reason that I travel all around the country speaking about this research and the six other partners that are with us is because even more than that, my greater passion is to see every one of us as individual Christians have a greater confidence to share Jesus. Because I'm sure you could think immediately of the few people around you that really just need to know the light and truth and hope of the gospel, don't they? I don't know about you, but amongst my friendship group the last few months have been reeling from lots of pain, of trauma, of loss, of challenge. And we see that in this story. I chose the story of the woman at the well, and we'll dip into it just slightly in the time that we've got. But actually, because she was a woman who lived with many challenges, didn't she? And Jesus didn't shy away from actually pointing those out, but he gently got alongside and spoke and just did life with her, being there at the right time, in the right place, and engaging in the meaningful, raw, gritty stuff of life. And I believe that that's what God calls us to do with no frills, lots of grace, hopefully, but just being alongside people. So that's why I chose that story of the woman at the well. And hopefully you, like me, will take something away from just that encounter of Jesus with that woman on that day. But without further ado, if I can introduce to you this research, as Matt said. In fact, before I do that, I'd love to say it's really timely being here because Matt and Liz and I have known each other for probably about 15 years. And very good friends, and I really value Matt and his ministry, both here and previously. But this is a perfect week to come and speak to you about talking Jesus, because Matt got roped in on more than one occasion for me in my role at the Evangelical Alliance, and has spoken into some filming that we've done before about how we see people come to faith in your previous role. But this week, as part of the Talking Jesus Toolkit, which is a suite of resources we've provided, Matt is actually our lead podcast that was launched this week, so you have a superstar in your midst. And this week, if you are on Spotify or if you ever listen to podcasts, there's a 10-part series of Talking Jesus podcasts. And this week, Matt was speaking on the topic of, is your church a welcoming church? So I'll leave you to think about your own context here. Certainly seems very welcoming to me arriving this morning. But Matt, we just, bless you and thank you for pouring into that. Please do listen to it. It's definitely worth listening to. So let me begin and take you through some of the findings, which I hope from this research will encourage you. They might equip you, they might inspire you, they might challenge you this morning. But let me give you a little bit of backdrop. Hands up for me, first of all, if anyone's even heard of the Talking Jesus research, either this time, this was launched in 2022, or the original piece of research back in 2015. Hands up, anyone who's come across it before? Quite a few of you. Brilliant. Okay. You don't need to know any knowledge for this morning, but that's great to know. So let me give you a little bit of background, and then I really am going to give you a fleeting whistle-stop tour through some of the findings that I hope will inspire you and be of interest to you. So back in 2015, basically what occurred through a group called the Denominational Leaders Summit, there were a bunch of leaders sat in one of their many meetings during the course of the year, and they said, wouldn't it be great if, as Christian leaders, so these are heads of denominations, CEOs, heads of networks, wouldn't it be great if actually, rather than just anecdotally and sharing stories, wouldn't it be great if we actually could map the UK landscape in terms of the state of faith and really know not only what non-Christians reflect when they think of the Christians that they might know, do they know any Christians, but also what do they think of the churches that they might know? So that was one of the things they wanted to find out, what were non-Christians' reflections. But they also said, wouldn't it be great to know, actually, how are we doing as a body of people, the church, how are we doing in terms of how do we feel about our own personal witness and sharing Jesus with those around us? So that was back in 2014-15. A whole pot of money was thrown at Savannah Comres, a national credible research body, and a piece of research came out in 2015 called Talking Jesus. interesting to know, maybe it was originally so positive that the group of leaders didn't believe it. And they sent it back, we threw more money at it, and actually what came back was resoundingly positive. And since 2015, that research, which at the time was done between ourselves at the Evangelical Alliance, the Church of England, and Hope Together, has actually gone on to inspire many churches in their mission and evangelism strategies. The dream was always, off the back of that original research, to 5 years on, remap the church landscape across the UK. But of course, you, like me, will know, 2015 had five. It's 2020. In comes an unexpected global pandemic, not the best time to be doing a piece of national research. So we paused at that point. But then I and others were part of conversations that basically led us to asking, again, post-COVID, how has the landscape changed and so on? So we went again with Savanta Comres, and as part of a six-way partnership, which if you flip over your copies of the report, you'll see the six-way partnership of those asking these big questions are ourselves at the EA, Hope Together, Alpha, Louis Palau Association, CV Global and Kingsgate. So hopefully you'll agree, a big raft of people just wanting to say, how can we be effective? What does the state of faith in the UK look like? So I'm going to give you just some of the key headline findings against that backdrop of where it came from, if that's okay, for the next 10 minutes or so. But this, again, let's tell you a little bit deeper. The survey was conducted last year, at the start of last year. It was 4,000 UK adults, and it was a 10-minute survey of people across all regions, gender, ethnicity, and so on. And then we wrote up the report in March, and as I said, it was launched at the end of last April, just after Easter time. As you can see there, very small margin of error and a boost sample of practicing Christians. And it's worth saying at this point, the practicing Christian definition, even that's quite interesting because that's changed since 2015. What was based on those people who would say, as a practicing Christian, they go to church weekly and would pray and read the Bible weekly. Moving on 7 years from 2015, we've based this on people who go to church monthly and would say that they pray and read the Bible at least weekly. And even that's interesting, isn't it? Because maybe you've seen here, certainly from our findings across the UK, COVID has brought about some of that slight shift in the UK church population. And that is certainly represented all over the UK. So those were the people that were involved in the survey. I went to Savanta Comres and said, it's important for me to know if I'm going to be speaking to this research. Is that sample of 4,000 people a credible piece of research that I can say the UK thinks, ... And they assured me that, yes, that is a very good sample of people. So let me share with you what some of the findings that came out of it. And forgive me if I whistle through some of them just for the sake of time. When we asked people to actually tick a box as to what they would say their religious identity was, we found this, that if you put those top two together, 48% of people would tick a box to say that they would say that they were a Christian. As you can see, 42% non-practicing people, so those people who would have a faith, not necessarily de-churched or who've come out of church, but actually have a faith, but for whatever reason, don't attend a local church. But 6% of people would say, yeah, I'm a sold-out, church-attending, spirit-filled, practicing Christian. Very similar to the census, if many of you saw that, 46.2% of people on the census said that they would sign as Christian. And it, as you may recall, just before Christmas, the headline that came out through the news was altogether negative. Do you remember? The headline came out of the first time in decades that Christianity has dropped below 50%. Well, actually, none of that was a surprise to us. It very much tallied up with the Talking Jesus research, the 48%. But what they didn't tell us is that whilst cultural Christianity is in decline, that people will not always tick that box to say that they'd affiliate to being Christian. They didn't actually tell us that this 6%, similar in the census, is actually not in decline. So it's worth us saying that actually the church is not in decline. Cultural Christianity is, but the church of God isn't. So that's worth us noting at this point in time. And as you can see there, if you drop your eye down on this side to the 25% in the black majority church, in multicultural churches where there are mixed ethnicities, actually those who would say they're practicing Christians is higher again at 25%. So we've got a good sized team. It's not nearly big enough as we'd like it to be, but actually this gives us a solid base to be thinking of the impact we can have on our the social communities around us. So let me take you into some of the questions, and it would be fascinating to hear what your reflections would be on those, whether you're surprised or not. We ask people this question: if you think of the person of Jesus, who would you say he is? And we found this, that whilst 33% there said that they thought Jesus was a good man, a prophet, a spiritual leader, but not God, we do also see that 20%, one in five people across the UK, around you and around me, one in five people would say that they believe that Jesus is God. I don't know about you, but whatever that begs questions around their own discipleship and what else they might know about God's big story, that's a great place to start a conversation, isn't it? We launched this just after Easter, as I mentioned, and we asked this question. Okay, so whatever you think about Jesus, what would you say about the resurrection? And we found this, that whilst 41% of people said, no, don't quite believe in the resurrection, we found that, again, if you put these top two answers together, a whacking great 45% of people across the UK would say, yes, they do believe in the resurrection. Isn't that good news? Does that surprise you? Maybe it does. It did surprise me. 29% of those who say, actually, I believe in the resurrection, but not quite maybe word for word as it's told in the Bible. But as you can see there, 16% of people said, yeah, I believe in the resurrection just as the Bible tells it. So again, 45% of people around our countries here across the nations believe in the resurrection. Again, a great starting point maybe for conversations, certainly around Easter time and maybe well beyond. We went on to ask some of these questions of those outside the church. So one question to our non-Christian friends was this: if you were to even start to explore faith, where would you go? How would you go about it? And we found this. This didn't surprise me so much. The top answer you can see here at 26% is that most people would go to Google. Hands up for me. Who goes to Google first before anything? I do, whether it's shopping, buying a holiday, car insurance, football scores, whatever it is, I'd probably go to Google, maybe Sky Sports, but Google first. And so it shows us, really interestingly, that actually in our culture, certainly during COVID and beyond, actually people go to the digital presence first to actually seek out the truth about maybe is there a God, what's the purpose of life, how can I become a Christian? And it's swiftly followed, you can see below, a further 10% who would look at YouTube. So what this tells us, what it speaks to me of, is actually this anonymity, this safe place of people seeking out a place to ask good questions. But really encouragingly for all of us, hopefully, the second joint top two answers is that if your friends, your family members are looking to explore faith who are not yet Christians, they say that actually the top two answers, the places that they would go, would be one to the local church. 22% of people said the local church. Again, the importance of our welcome, our hospitality, our events, our open doors. But also, 22% of people across the UK said that they would go to the Bible first to explore faith. Now, as I mentioned, I've spoken to this research with lots of different groupings of leaders and have had a number of Christian leaders say to me, Rachel, is it really bad that I'm really surprised that that answer is quite so high, that people would go to the Bible first? My response is, no, it's not bad that we're surprised, but isn't it a timely reminder of actually getting the word of God, whether it's paper-based or digitally, into people's hands, actually speaks of the transformative word of God and the power and the impact that it can have on people's lives today in 2023. And I've allowed that for me personally to challenge me, getting hold of gospels from Hope Together or wherever it may be, and just putting it in with people's Christmas presents. Even at the EA, we're changing our website so that we don't just talk about who we are and what we do, but we speak of actually, you know, is there a God? How can I come to faith? So we've allowed some of these to be changing our culture corporately as well as what we do individually. And there's loads of other places, as you can see, that people look to explore faith, whether that's with somebody alongside or whether it's anonymously. Let me take us on. We ask this question of the non-Christians that we know. We ask them, okay, do you know anyone who's a practicing Christian? We found this. 53% of the UK would say that they know somebody in their close sphere of influence who is a practicing Christian based on that definition that I gave you earlier. Again, we'd probably agree, not even nearly where we'd want that to be, but this marks a big alert in the research because with that compare and contrast ability with the 2015, going back 7 years, this was actually 68%. So it shows a significant drop. So this should challenge us, shouldn't it, as the church, to be saying, if there's been a drop, maybe that speaks of COVID, isolation, lockdowns, all that we've been through, but actually that should challenge us to be practicing Christians, making ourselves known in the places and spaces that we find ourselves, so that we can see this become higher, hopefully, over the next 5 years until we go again. So 53% of people know us. We then went on to ask them, well, how do they know us? And you'll see this, encouragingly, they know us, first of all, 35% of people know us as a friend. So the people around you, actually, we're in really close proximity. 35% of people said friend, 33% said we're a family member. And then, as you can see, we may also be an acquaintance or a workmate or colleague. And interestingly, this 8% at neighbour has actually doubled over the last 7 years. And that, to me, maybe speaks of who had those WhatsApp groups during lockdown. Do you immediately, they sprung up, the WhatsApp groups, your street, talking about baking sourdough and kneading yeast and whatever else. Certainly, maybe just my neighbourhood. But those WhatsApp groups immediately brought us into close contact, didn't it, with our neighbours. I don't know about you, my WhatsApp group lasted from March 2020 till about September, and then it stopped. So for me, the challenge when I see this is brilliant that they know us more as neighbours on their doorstep, but how much do we keep intentionally investing with those in our immediate spheres of influence and not just letting that go now that we're back out in the world? But it means that the people that know us, they know us and they know us really well. We're in close proximity to them. So we went on to ask them, okay, so you think of that Christian that you know, how would you describe them? What do you think of them? And this is what we found. That unlike the portrayal that we so often have in the media, which is altogether boring, dull, rule-regulating and not to be befriended, maybe, actually, this couldn't be further from the truth. The people that know us, who know us as Christians, they really like us. They think that we're friendly, we're caring, we're good-humoured and we're generous. And actually, some of those other things that maybe the media might portray us as you can see here, much, much lower down. So they know us well, and they really like us. But there, and I said some of this research comes with, hopefully, some encouragement for you, but equally, it comes with challenge. We asked, we went on to ask this question. Okay, so that's about the person that you know. How about the church that you might reflect on? And this is what we found, that when we asked people what their reflections were of the church, it wasn't altogether as positive. As you can see, 26% of people said they thought the church could be narrow-minded, and a further 26% could be hypocritical. But as you see at the top of this slide here, it's not altogether bad news. 22% of people said they thought the church could be really friendly and that the church could also be caring. So doesn't that give us a bit of a challenge? Isn't that interesting? I find it interesting that actually when people reflect on the individual Christian that they know, you, me, actually they know us well, they like us, we're in close proximity. But actually as a church, we've got some work to do. Not saying you have, but as the church, we've got some work to do. Actually, to be opening, to be accessible, to be able to talk about life stuff in a way that isn't condemning or judgmental, but actually welcomes and loves people, just as we see in the story of the woman at the well. Jesus encountered that woman with no judgment, did he? Ask good questions, he got alongside, but he was welcoming and hospitable to her and met her at her point of need. So really interesting to reflect on this proximity piece of people knowing us. And sometimes that threshold into church being difficult, not impossible, but certainly challenging for some people. Just briefly, before I quickly scoot to looking at what us Christians think, I'll leave you with this big stat here. They're nice and bold. 1 in 3 people that we asked, if they've had a conversation with a practicing Christian that they know, we asked them, would you be interested to go again, to actually have a deeper conversation about things of faith or of Jesus? And we found this, that 1 in 3 people in 2022-23 said yes, I'd be really open and wanting to actually go further in conversation. What makes this statistic even more exciting is that, again, if you compare back, this was actually 1 in 5 in 2015. So doesn't it speak to us something of that shift? And I don't know if you see it, but I certainly see it. This shift of people's openness, of seeking out things of spirituality, of faith, of life, and how they all mix together. And we're really encouraged by this research that speaks of 1 in 3 people that you know or that I know will be open to actually hearing something of Jesus or of your personal story as well. So very briefly, just onto my last few slides, let me reflect for you, just asking the practicing Christians of how they actually feel about faith sharing themselves. And I wonder what you would say if you were asked these questions. We ask people, okay, so do you feel it's part of your role as a Christian witness? How important is it? And we found this, that 75% of practicing Christians said, yeah, this is part of our job role, believe in the Great Commission, that we're called to share Jesus with others. And interestingly, 77% of people said they actually felt really confident to do so. I don't know about you, I was very surprised that that was as high as it was. As I look around at my peers in my church, I wouldn't guess that that was more than 20 or 30%. I don't think we always feel that confident. But maybe it speaks to the fact that we do feel passionate, we do feel confident, but we either don't have the opportunities or we don't enter in for fear of other things. Maybe like on this third circle here, 40% of people told us that if they enter into conversations, they do sometimes fear the big questions that they may not have answers to. Totally understandable, isn't it? I'm sure we've all been there. But this last circle marks out to me one of the biggest alerts, again, or learning things in the research for me personally, which is this. When we asked individual practicing Christians, we found that 42% of people said that they didn't know enough non-Christians or they didn't know them well enough to share their faith with them, which to me speaks of actually sometimes maybe we just keep it all to ourselves too much, don't we? We maybe are so busy with all many good things, church meetings, commitments and so on and so forth. But actually this speaks to me the fact that we need to be really intentional in being in the places and spaces where we can actually share Jesus with others. In those nuggets of ordinary everyday life, dropped into conversations, maybe not even encountering the big questions, but actually just doing life alongside people, but being really intentional. And I don't know if you find yourself, whether you've got hobbies, whether you're at the school gates, whether you're in the workplace, whether you're in the gym, in the pub, in a cafe, wherever it is, actually going back to that one in three people around us are open and wanting and willing to be asking these big questions of faith. So maybe, as I've tried to do over these last few months in seeing friends real around me, as I said earlier, with places of pain and difficulty, to just be that little bit bolder and braver, to be intentional and to make Jesus known through the little bits of everyday life and conversation. Let me take you on to this. When we think of those conversations, when we step out to just be prayerfully thinking in this midst of this conversation, how can I speak something of truth into it? We ask people, non-Christians, when you've been in a conversation with a Christian, what is it that you remember or recall about it? And they said this, the top answer, as you can see, was that even in the midst of that conversation, they remember that they were asked their story first. As you can see, closely followed by the 30% there, that actually that Christian they were speaking to went on to share something of their own personal journey. And so that immediately speaks of this sense of dialogue, doesn't it? Not just us having a moment and needing to say it all, but actually a conversation, a dialogue, a journeying alongside. And I love these other two statistics that tells us that, is it 13% of people said that they remember that that Christian offered to pray for them in that moment or maybe afterwards. And we're seeing certainly across the UK, even in recent weeks, conversations where people are saying prayer is a real clincher, that I'm sure you find it as well. If you offer to pray with people, there's not many people who will say no, or whether you're offering to pray for somebody after that conversation. And actually it just gives that little opening into greater conversations and of course God to do his thing as he does and just meet them where they're at. And I also like this 6% of people who say that even in the midst of that encounter, they had an encounter with Jesus. Doesn't that show that whether it's because of us or despite of us, God is powerfully at work? People come to faith predominantly through Christian families, through family discipleship, through life events, through reading the Bible, through going along to groups, through spiritual experiences. All of this should show us that actually through so many of our aspects of ministry, however you're involved and you serve in this church as well, God is powerfully at work using what you bring to encounter or to allow other people to encounter him through those ministries. We did find, I'm going to flick through, that in the lives of over 18s, a life crisis moment was the biggest thing, the most pivotal thing in seeing them come to faith. So if you have people around you who are in those places of pain or transition, loss or grief or bereavement, that actually God, whilst we wouldn't wish these things on us, we haven't wished these places of COVID, of threat of war, of death of the Queen, of cost of living crisis, and yet all of these things We can just simply bring people and our friends before God and say, even in the midst of that, how can you encounter them and bring them to know something of your truth and light and hope? Because in the midst of that, as you will know, I'm sure, many people turn to ask those big questions, don't they, in the midst of life crisis or life events, and indeed lots of other ways that people find those influences impactful on their own lives. I want to leave you with these two slides and then hand back to Matt, if that's okay. But we just lastly asked a few more people in the research, we asked, if you're a practicing Christian, at what age did you come to faith? And many of you have been involved in toddler or children or youth ministry over the years. This may not be a surprise to you. But what it shows us is, praise God, people come to faith at all ages, which is really encouraging, isn't it? Even today, people are coming to faith at all ages. And so our ministries across age brackets is really important. But what's interesting is to see that for those under 18s particularly, actually, there are the places that are really formational. Young people asking big questions, seeking out what life is all about. And so our investment in our toddlers, our children, our youth is so vastly important in seeing people come to faith. And I'll leave you with this last slide, which I think is an interesting one for us, which resonates something of the culture that we find ourselves in. And it was this. We asked people, if you could note one of the biggest questions that you find yourself asking at the moment, what would it be? Well, interestingly, as you can see there, was it 22% of people said none of the above, which is a whole other piece of research. We want to know what questions are people actually asking. But out of those that they had a broad selection to choose from, we found this, that most people across the will everything be okay? Closely followed by what will make me happy, what happens when you die, age-old questions that we've asked through generations. But I don't know about you, doesn't that fascinate you? It certainly interests me that most people are asking, will everything be okay? For me, that speaks of the backdrop of actually this kind of reeling of our culture and our society, this pandemic of loneliness, of isolation, of anxiety amongst our young people, seeking out answers to that question of will everything be okay? And somebody asked me that directly only a couple of weeks ago. I was speaking at a women's breakfast and they said, what would your answer to that be? Will everything be okay? I don't know what you would say. My immediate answer was no. Everything isn't going to be okay, because life this side of heaven, I've been convinced much more this year than ever before, life this side of heaven is broken, isn't it? And yet, what's important is that God is still faithful, God is still the solid rock, God is still eternal, he still loves us, he still has a message of hope and truth and light, and that's what I believe he calls us to, just in those everyday nuggets of conversations, pour into people's hearts and lives. So I just want to leave that with you this morning as I hand back to just think, actually, if you find yourselves in those conversations, as I have done many times recently, to just think, actually, this person is in a place of pain, or they're seeking something, they're asking, will everything be okay? How can just the little that you share have lasting and eternal impact as God just uses it to open up those broader conversations and to help him or her find in the midst of those conversations, actually, that God is a God of truth, of light, of hope, and of peace, even in the midst of our reeling society. So I hope that gives you a little snapshot of just some of what the UK findings show us. The rest is in the report. But I hope it leaves you feeling encouraged too, that actually where one in three people around you and around me are open to the gospel, then God calls us just to do our little bit in the everyday. And you can really have an impact on the lives of people around you. Thank you for listening.